You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the True Crime Never Sleeps show. Tonight on Cold Case Fridays, we dive into the Burger Chef murders. Before we do that, let me know your thoughts on this case in the comments section below. And with that, let's dive into today's episode. Just shortly before midnight on November 17th, 1978, a teenager named Brian Crane was on his way home in Speedway, Indiana, when he decided to stop by the Burger Chef he worked at to see his friends and coworkers. Burger Chef was an American fast food chain that started in 1954 in Indianapolis, but by 1982, the owners gradually started selling the restaurants to Hardee's. Brian's four friends on duty that night were 20-year-old Jane Freed, 17-year-old Ruth Shelton, 16-year-old Daniel Davis, and 16-year-old Mark Flemings. Since Brian worked there, he knew they closed up at around 11 p.m. since he was passing by. He wanted to see if his friends needed help closing up the store for the night, but when he got there at about 15 minutes before or after midnight, he found the back door open, the lights still on, and no one inside. While looking around for the assistant manager, Jane, Brian noticed a few odd details, like both Jane and Ruth's purses were still inside the restaurant, but Jane's car, a Chevy Vega, was missing from the parking lot. He also noticed that all the cash register drawers were lying on the floor with all the money missing. So fearing the worst, Brian called the Speedway police. When the police arrived, they started searching the Burger Chef, found two empty currency bags, and an empty roll of adhesive tape next to the open safe. It was determined that $581 was missing, of course, along with the four employees as well. So the first theory that the police had was that the four employees stole the money and went for a joyride, presumably in Jane's car. The police just believed that once the money ran out, they would all come back home. They never even considered the other possibilities, like perhaps the four employees were in trouble, or they got kidnapped, or that they were dead. And so when the morning shift employees came in to open up the Burger Chef, the police let them clean up the crime scene, and the restaurant was open for business that day. No evidence was collected from the scene before the shop was cleaned, and they cleaned it before the police even took photos. Yes, this is going to be one of those kinds of stories. Later on the morning of November 18th, Jane's car was found abandoned about a mile and a half away on West 15th Street. Police now went from thinking that the four employees stole some cash and went out to party to, oh no, maybe they were kidnapped, and they quickly launched a search party for them. Speedway police went on to tell the press that it was, quote, a very peculiar case because there were no leads and neither they nor the employee families had received a ransom call. However, the search would end the very next day. On November 19th, police received a call from two people walking around their property in a secluded patch of Johnson County woods, about 20 miles away from the Burger Chef restaurant. While out for their walk, they came across two of the Burger Chef employees, Ruth Shelton and Daniel Davis, who were lying side by side on the ground, both having been shot in the back of the head with a .38 caliber gun. Jane Freed was found later a few yards away from the two bodies, and it appeared as if she got free briefly, and then she was chased down and caught. Stabbed twice with a hunting knife. Now, something that wasn't public knowledge at the time, a detail the police withheld, was that the handle of the hunting knife broke off and was missing. However, the blade of the knife was still lodged in her chest. Mark Flemings was found last, and investigators weren't really sure what happened to him, so they surmised that he also got free briefly. Now, some articles say that the police theorized that he ran headfirst into a tree and knocked himself out. Other articles say that he incurred blunt force trauma in the head after being battered with some sort of chain. I'm using the three most comprehensive articles I found to get the full picture here, but I'm going to prioritize Indianapolis Monthly since it has a lot of input from the actual lead investigators who spent years on the case. So ultimately, no one really knows what happened to Mark Flemings. All they can determine is that Mark Flemings asphyxiated on his own blood, and that was most likely the cause of death. All four employees were found still wearing their brown and orange uniforms, and allegedly even still had the cash in their pockets and their jewelry and watches. Now, since the police allowed the Burger Chef employee to clean the shop, there were no fingerprints, there was no blood, and there were no hair samples that could be collected and analyzed. There was also no way to know whether a struggle had taken place or not. So clearly, the police had a bit of a problem on their hands now. According to Vigil Vandegrift, who was a detective with the Marion County Sheriff's Department at the time, said, quote, "They didn't process it as a murder. They didn't know it was a murder. The police didn't have a clue what was going on at that restaurant. They kind of messed up the crime scene." And Buddy Elwinger, a Speedway police officer who worked on the case, also said, quote, "We screwed it up from the beginning." Well, yeah, but they didn't only screw up the restaurant, they also screwed up the actual site where the bodies were found. According to the author Julie Young, who wrote the book The Burger Chef Murders in Indiana, said, quote, "As varied departments converged on the site, some drove through areas that should have been sealed off. There were rumors that one of the bodies was moved before the coroner or evidence technician arrived at the scene. And allegedly, one of the investigators even took a piece of identification found on one of the bodies home with him. And didn't realize it until several weeks later." Yeah, I told you it's going to be one of those stories. But somehow, it gets worse. Now, the next thing to happen is the FBI, the state police, and the Indianapolis Police Department, along with the Marion County Sheriff's Department, were called in to assist with the case. This is when Vandegrift was brought in to help interview potential witnesses. And since the crime scene was useless, all that was left was the hope that someone, somewhere, might have seen or heard something that could offer the detectives a clue. Burger Chef even offered a $25,000 reward, which in today's money would be like $123,000, for any information which would lead to an arrest. And to make the reward even more enticing, an anonymous donor added another $10,000. So naturally, this reward money led to hundreds of letters and calls coming in. Unfortunately, not much would come from that, but a lot of people in Speedway started to speculate that there were two other crimes that may have been connected to the Burger Chef murders. The first one was the murder of an elderly woman named Julia Cyphers, if I got that right, who was shot to death and killed in her garage in Speedway. Her murder still remains unsolved as well. Julia was also closely associated to a guy named Brett Kimberlin, who is better known as the Speedway Bomber. The other crime thought to be connected to the Burger Chef murders were Kimberlin's 8 random bombings, which fortunately didn't lead to any deaths, but unfortunately, they did lead to several injuries. These were later ruled out as being connected. Just to clarify, Julia's daughter was at some point in a relationship with Brett Kimberlin, and that is how she was closely associated with him. I believe it is said she didn't like the guy, but rightfully so, though. He was a fucking asshole. He tried to blow people up. Now, with those two crimes being ruled out, the next major theory from the police theory the police worked with was that this was a robbery gone wrong. Perhaps one or more of the employees put up a fight and the rest of the workers had to be quote unquote eliminated. The only issue with the logic was that if this was a robbery, then the killers left behind a lot of valuables. They left behind the money, the jewelry, watches, Jane's car. And if this was just a spree killing, there doesn't appear to be any clear reason why the 4 employees were killed either. And it doesn't even appear that was the original plan. According to the website AETV.com, quote, "The fact that the kidnappers had murdered them in 3 different places seems to suggest that they hadn't planned on murdering anyone in the first place. The kidnappers had shot Davis and Shelton multiple times in the head, neck, and shoulders, and stabbed Freed twice in her heart with a hunting knife. What happened to Flemons was a little harder to figure out. There were confusions on his face, but that is not what killed him. Investigators wondered if the kidnappers only meant to rob the store and had taken the employees hostage when one recognized them, because Mark Flemons was covering another employee's shift that night. Investigators speculated that the kidnappers hadn't planned on him being there, and he was the one who recognized them." All pretty good points, I guess, but good points don't help an investigation like this, you know? The police were still fucking baffled. It seems they just started exploring whatever possibilities they believed could get them closer to solving it. And you know, you can't blame them. The police probably got a lot of shit about this investigation, too. According to Virgil, the best lead they got came from a 16-year-old eyewitness who had seen
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Two suspicious men in a car outside the Burger Chef just before closing time. Both men were said to be white and in their 30s. One guy had a beard, and the other was clean-shaven with light-colored or fair hair. Vandegrift had sketches made of the suspects and even 3D clay busts. Several people of interest were soon linked to the visual aids, including a person Vandegrift tracked to a bar where he had allegedly been bragging about committing the murders. So while off-duty, Van went undercover and met this guy, and he started playing pool with him. He was talking to the man, saying, quote, the man all but confessed to Vandegrift, even snapping his cue to illustrate what he had done to one of the victims. But when police brought the suspect downtown, the man passed the polygraph test and denied any involvement. There was no physical evidence, so the police had to release him and move on. I'll never understand why people do this. You think you're fucking cool because you killed four teenagers? No, you're just a pathetic loser. And this is pretty much where the case started getting cold. Over the next couple of months, reports would be published every now and then about a new potential suspect. And it was usually someone arrested for a robbery of another fast food joint or a murder somewhere else nearby. But each suspect would eventually be eliminated one by one. Even at one point, 1981, so about 2.5 years later, Jane Fried's own brother, James, was arrested on drug charges and implicated in the murders. However, he was later released and cleared of any suspicion and involvement. The police at this point got so desperate that Vandegrift even went to psychics for help. I'm not going to be a dick about it this time. The dude desperately wanted to solve this one. He said, quote, it's not like we went that route immediately. As soon as we felt there was a reason to head that direction, we decided to do that. If it was a waste of time, it was a waste of time. At least we tried something. Which, I mean, fair enough. Try everything if you're trying to solve a case. But if it was a waste of time and it didn't help, well, sorry, couldn't help myself. Okay, so then what did help? Well, as a matter of fact, a confession from a piece of shit behind the bars of the Pendleton Correctional Facility. Donald Wayne Forrester. 34-year-old had just been convicted for the assault of a sexual nature of a woman in Hamilton County. He got sentenced to 95 years in prison. He was just about to be transferred as a sex offender to the notoriously violent Indiana State Prison in Michigan City. He was apparently willing to confess to avoid his scheduled transfer, which according to the detective he called Mel Wiley, quote, he didn't want to go to Michigan City. No one wants to go to Michigan City. Now, Mel Wiley was a 34-year-old detective, but unlike Vandegrift, Wiley was never assigned to assist in the Burger Chef murders, though he did follow the investigation. Now, the detectives are well aware that inmates confess or flip information to authorities in hopes of reduced sentences, preferential treatment, or some sort of whatever in exchange for information, and usually these don't amount to much. But detectives decided to hear him out anyway. Clearly, Forrester wanted to avoid the state prison in Michigan City. So Wiley and his partner decided to sit down with Forrester, but it soon became clear that Forrester knew things that only a, quote, witness would know. Wiley already knew from the background checks that Forrester had grown up in New Whiteland in Johnson County, not far from where the four bodies the employees were found. Forrester was also living in Speedway, having literally just been released from prison from a prior assault of a sexual nature conviction on the day of the Burger Chef murders. Now, of course, that's just circumstantial, but what was damning is that Donald Forrester confessed on tape that he was the monster that shot Ruth and Daniel. Now, of course, a confession like this is not enough, So the detectives tried to test Forrester. They put him in the back of a squad car and drove him out to Johnson County. Mel Wiley claims that Donald Forrester directed them through the wooded area, which had a secluded makeout spot, or a lover's lane area for local teenagers for years. Forrester walked the officers back into the forest right to the crime scene, and without any prompt, described exactly where he shot Davis and Shelton, and outlined precisely where and in what position the bodies were found. 2 days later, Wiley said, quote, he was correct. That got our attention. Over the next 2 years, yeah, this shit really dragged it out. He fed Wiley little bits of information. So now, according to Donald Forrester, this is what really happened. Jane Fried's brother James owed money from a drug deal, a fact that is backed up by his criminal record. So Forrester and his three associates came simply to threaten Jane. Mark Flemings then stepped in order to protect her. A scuffle then broke out outside the restaurant, and Flemings fell and hit his head on the bumper of the assailant's van, which could account for the blunt force trauma. Believing that they had killed Flemings, the group of four losers then decided to take all four of the employees to Johnson County and eliminate any potential witnesses. Forrester then told the detectives that he was the one who pulled the trigger and shot Ruth and Daniel, but he also gave the names of the three other people he said were involved. Forrester also somehow knew about the broken handle on the hunting knife that was found in Jane's chest, a detail that was not yet widely publicized. When asked where the gun was, he said that he had thrown the gun into the White River and directed the cops to the bridge from where he tossed the weapon. However, the gun was never found. Interestingly, though, Wiley tracked down Forrester's ex-wife, who told him that just after the murders, Forrester had taken her to the same wooded area. There, he left her in the car while he went and collected three or four shell casings. She said they went back home, and he flushed them down the toilet. Wiley and his partner then went to the house that Forrester had been living in, which was now owned by somebody else, but they found that it ran on a septic system. They then obtained a search warrant, dug up the septic tank, and when they inspected the tank, just like Forrester's ex-wife said, they found several .38 caliber shell casings. Virgil was convinced that Wiley had gotten the guy, and then someone on the police force made the biggest mistake yet. On November 14, 1986, somebody inside the department leaked the details of Forrester's confession and his full cooperation. And then all of a sudden, Forrester recants his confession and claims it was coerced. It is speculated that perhaps he did this to avoid revenge or retribution from the three associates he implicated in the murders. Even though the police had quite a bit on him without his continued cooperation, the investigation once again stalled and no further evidence was found. Then, on December 22nd, Marion County Prosecutor Stephen Goldsmith announced that Forrester would not be charged in the Burger Chef murders. In fact, Goldsmith added that with the case gone cold, he doubted anyone ever would be. Donald Forrester then died in prison from cancer in 2006 at the age of 55. I haven't been able to confirm if he did go to the state prison in Michigan City, but I hope he did. I really like the ending to the Indianapolis Monthly article. It says, quote, at night, Vandegrift will often find himself online, scrolling through the voluminous world of amateur true crime writers. They have all written about the Burger Chef murders, and most of them wind up taking jabs at the police for failing to solve the case. That's me. Sorry. Van tries not to engage. He knows it's a winless fight. Don't feed the trolls, Van. But one night, several months ago, he logged into one of the unsolved murder sites. The overwrought and error-ridden Burger Chef story, he permitted himself to punch out four words in the comments. The case was solved. I mean, they definitely tried their best despite the mistakes they were made. But what do you think? Do you agree with Vandegrift? Do you agree that Forrester was the guy? I mean, he is very suspicious, but evidently they didn't have enough evidence to charge him with the crime. During the summer of 2018, the Speedway community, as well as family and friends of the victims, raised money to plant four red oak trees to honor the victims. Each tree is adorned with a plaque with a short biography of one of the victims. Ruth Shelton, creative, honest, and kind, with a love for music. Jane Fried, a leader with a sense of humor and a heart of gold. Mark Flemings, friendly and selfless, with a sense of style. Roy Davis, a talented photographer who made a loved one smile. And that is our story for Cold Case Friday. Let me know your theories in the comments section below. Do you think it's unsolved, or do you think we actually know who did it and unfortunately got away with it? And of course, give us a thumbs up if you like our video. As always, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS or scan the QR code on the screen. And with that, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.